Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, everyone. It is hour two of the Brian Lehrer Show here at WNYC. My name is Jamil Smith. I'm filling in for Brian this week. It's 8:50 in the morning. Let's just say it's 8:50 in the morning. It's actually 11 o'clock, but let's say it's 8:50. And you're in the Flushing Avenue subway stop, and it's been 20 minutes with no train in sight. People are shoving past you as they cram themselves onto the platform, and you only have 20 minutes to get to the East Village before you're late for work. So what do? Fighting the other commuters for a spot on the next train may feel like victory, but you'll still be late. Running up the street to hail a Lyft or a bus may get you there, but how much might that cost? What do you give up when you call in sick? Many New Yorkers live on precise schedules when you know down to the minute when you need to leave home in order to be at work on time. With setbacks on all of New York's transportation systems, chaos is throwing the schedules of millions of New Yorkers out of whack. What in your life has the transit imbroglio affected? Are you frequently late for work? Do you avoid going places that require public transportation? Do you date differently, hang out with friends differently, shop differently? Let us know. Call us at 212-433-WNYC. Again, that's 212-433-9692. Joining me now to discuss it joining me now to discuss what it means and to be a New Yorker in this age of subway dysfunction is Emma Fitzsimmons, transit reporter for the New York Times. Emma, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Can you give us a quick roundup of what's been going on with the subways and the New Jersey Transit recently?
Right. So right now we're in what everyone's calling the summer of hell. The subway has been particularly bad. Yesterday there was a track fire and it caused delays across the city. At the same time, we're seeing fewer tracks available at Penn Station. And so New Jersey Transit and Long Island Railroad commuters are really being impacted, although it hasn't been as bad as some people suspected. It seems like people are working from home or taking different train routes, but it's been just disruption after disruption, and it's really starting to take a mental toll on New Yorkers.
Now, how has the MTA planned to address these issues, especially the Harlem fire that happened yesterday?
Well, the governor declared a state of emergency, and he appointed a new MTA chair to go in and look at restructuring the MTA, to look at presenting a plan to fix the subway system. So we're waiting on more details about what exactly they're going to do. But yesterday, the track fire was caused by trash on the tracks, and the MTA says they're working to put vacuums in the system to scoop up some of this trash, but clearly they're not doing a good enough job if this happened. And then we also had the derailment in Harlem last month where a train came off the tracks. And so there's safety concerns, and then there's also just the logistics here. Yesterday, I live on the A train, so I was swept up in this and had to take a number one train that was overheated and crowded. There were just hundreds of people at every station. It was a really stressful experience. I got to late work, but, you know, fortunately, I'm in a position where I don't face an economic setback if I'm late to work, though it is embarrassing, you know, to arrive late and to miss meetings and that type of thing.
Right. I mean, how are New Yorkers, you know, whether or not they face a penalty for being late, how are they coping with this unreliable subway system?
Some people are leaving early. This morning I had a meeting at 10 a.m. and I gave myself a full hour to get there, even though it should only take 30 or 40 minutes. I think people are leaving earlier, and often they are forced to take Ubers or Lyfts, which hits their pocketbook. And I thought it was interesting, you know, Scott Stringer released this report and it found that some people had even lost their jobs, a small percentage of the respondents. So I think there's a lot of stress, especially among lower income New Yorkers who are maybe making hourly wages and whose bosses may be less lenient when these things happen.
Right, because I feel like there's a lot of New Yorkers who are depending on either flexible schedules, say people working in fast food restaurants or what have you, or they're also having to work around childcare issues. What have people been telling you about the very, you know, specific issues that transit has caused problems in their lives about?
I spoke with one hourly worker who works in a kitchen, and he said, you know, he lost an hour and a half of pay, and these things sort of add up. I spoke with a New Jersey Transit commuter who's getting home much later now because of the problems at Penn Station, and she says she's relying on friends to take care of her children, but that sort of puts stress on her, and some people are having to pay babysitters or child care providers more money to stay late with their children. And so there's the economic toll, there's the mental toll, and, you know, yesterday my husband got swept up in one of the disruptions, and he said, if this happened every day, I'd leave New York. So there's people who are even thinking about, you know, is New York City a place where I can make a life if there's no reliability when it comes to the transit systems?
Again, I'm speaking with Emma Fitzsimmons, transit reporter for the New York Times. Again, we're taking your calls at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Emma, are people making consciously different plans, or are they having unconscious reactions to what's going on? Is it almost becoming like a tick that they have to deal with, you know, in terms of dealing with, you know, subway delays or other kinds of transit delays?
I think it's a mix of both. They are changing. Even, you know, you talk to people about making real estate decisions over where they would rent or buy based on the proximity to Manhattan. And, of course, in New York, you know, the closer it is to a train system, the more expensive an apartment is. And so, again, the delays really do affect low-income people more. And I think at the same time, you know, people are maybe changing their social plans. You know, I don't feel like waiting on a train for an hour. I was on a train on Saturday night around midnight, and it was packed to the brim with people. And so maybe people are deciding, you know, not to go out on social outings. And I think it affects them during the weekday, during the weekends. And there is this concern now that there's sort of no sense of when it will get better. There's some things the MTA is trying to do, buy new subway cars, improve the signal system, but these things take a long time. And so there's no sense that there's sort of relief in sight.
Right. Let's go to the phones. Eric in Manhattan. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, it's good to be here. Thanks for taking my call.
Indeed.
It just seems to me that New Yorkers are supposed to be so resilient that if we have this kind of problem, especially during the summer when it's loaded with tourists, we're going to try and get to work earlier. We shouldn't be getting to work just at the bell anyway. If you want to be successful, you kind of have to plan on being at work a half an hour or so early anyway.
Wow. All right. Well, Eric, thank you for the call. Let's go to Aaron, who is now stuck on his commute. Aaron, in the Lincoln Tunnel.
Lincoln Tunnel on a bus from North Jersey coming in from Leonia. It usually takes me half an hour. Now I left at 9:45, and I have a meeting in 15 minutes at Google, but I'll be late, and everyone else is late. I'm usually 30-45. Everyone's 30-45 minutes late to everything now.
Oh, and now, how regular is this, Aaron?
Every day. I was like that last night. I made the mistake coming in for a meeting last night, left at 3 o'clock, didn't get in till 6. You know, it's to the point that I'm just going to start driving now. Even though it's more money, it's, you know, it's not going to take 2-3 hours.
Okay. Thank you, Aaron. Hope you get through all that soon. My goodness. Emma, what are you, you're hearing from lots of people like Aaron who are stuck, you know, in the midst of their actual travels. What kind of frustrations are building up?
Yeah, it even affects the rail workers or the bus drivers. You know, passengers are mad at them and often take it out on them. There is a sense of frustration. Even when you get home, you sort of can't relax after a long day. And there hasn't been a good study that sort of looks at the economic impact of this. There was a study back in the 80s when the subway was really bad, and they looked at the billions of dollars that are sort of lost. But there's so many hours of lost productivity here. If he misses that meeting and everyone else misses that meeting, you know, there's business that's not being done. I spoke with one woman who is late to a therapy appointment, and her therapist was also late in the same subway disruption. So that appointment never happened. And this is happening every day, you know, in a city of 8 million people.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, DNA Info recently reported on the psychological effects of commuting. They cited studies that showed long commutes cause you to sleep less, exercise less. They raise your cholesterol, make you lonely even. And in one study, they even found that ultra-long commutes may actually shorten your lifespan. Are there other side effects of commuting that you've noticed on your transit beat that people experience?
The biggest thing I hear is the economic impact. You know, we did a reader call out. We received hundreds of responses from people, and they were saying, you know, I had to spend $25 on an Uber to get to a meeting. I had to pay a babysitter. I lost hourly wages of work. I think it really does hit you in your pocketbook. And of course, there's mental fatigue and stress as well. And when you look at the rise of New York City, so much of the reason that it's been so successful today is because it has a transit system that you can rely on. And if that changes, people are becoming concerned sort of about the future of New York City.
I want to talk to Robert in Queens. Robert, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. How are you?
Not too bad. How about yourself?
I'm okay. Thanks for taking my call. I'm not going to bash the MTA that much, but I will say it's really frustrating to be standing on a platform, or like your guest was saying, taking a train, which used to take you a destination that would take you 30 minutes, 25 minutes, now takes 2 hours. That's happened to me a number of times. There are times also that I had been calling in to work and telling them I can't get in there because when I would hit three or four of my trains in the area, they're all out, especially on the weekend. It's like, I don't understand that. The other thing is that, you know, I hear a lot of people that bash the MTA because they say, well, you know, look at Tokyo, look at Boston, look at it. They don't realize that those systems are not 24 hours. We have a luxury here of having a system that's operating 24 hours. The problem is it's always broken, it seems like, after Hurricane Sandy.
Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that, Emma, a little bit later. I'll ask you now. You know, what effects, you know, continued effects are we seeing from the damage caused by Hurricane Sandy in the subways or New Jersey Transit, wherever?
Well, the big concern, obviously, is that the L train is going to close between Manhattan and Brooklyn in early 2019 to repair some of the damage. So the MTA has been going from tunnel to underwater tunnel that was flooded during Hurricane Sandy, and they're making long-term repairs. And then in New Jersey Transit, obviously, the tunnel there was flooded, and there's been a big push to advocate for the Gateway Program, which would build a new tunnel under the river because the old one is essentially falling apart because the salt water damage. And so there's a lot of recovery happening from Sandy, but you can't really blame that for the widespread problems that are happening. Those problems really are about the aging infrastructure, the increased ridership, and the failures to sort of keep the system in a state of good repair. You can't blame it all on Sandy.
So let me also let me go to Mark in Manhattan. Mark, you're on WNYC.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
The New York City transit system is a total disaster. I mean, if I have mobility issues, for instance, and I live in the Upper Bronx, so I take the 2 train to either the 5 or the 4 where I have to run up steps, and then they take trains out of service. For the last 2 days, the number 6 train is a disaster. I get off of Grand Central to switch to go to 23rd Street, and they wait for everybody to crowd into this train after waiting 10 minutes for a number 6, and then they make the announcement this train is going to go express to 14th Street. So everybody gets off, the train pulls out empty. You have to wait sometimes as much as another 10 minutes, and then the station is crowded and the train is crowded. And they create the situations like this. I mean, it's ridiculous. I've taken pictures of this, and the train is hot. Last year, there was a pregnant woman on the 6th train, and we were trying to find out what was wrong with her. The train car was over 100 degrees. The station at 125th Street was like 90 degrees, and as I'm taking her off the train with this other gentleman, the conductor's screaming at us, no, no, don't touch her, leave her. Meanwhile, she's upchucking all over the place. And many times, mm-hmm. the transit authority employees don't know what's going on themselves. One day, mm-hmm. it took me 3 hours to get home, 6 trains and a bus.
3 hours? from what part of town to another part of town?
From Midtown Manhattan to the Bronx, to the Upper Bronx. I had to take 6 trains. Again, I had to end up taking a number 6 train all the way to Pelham Bay and take the number 12 bus across to where I live.
Wow. And if I may... Yeah, if I may ask, Mark, what kind of disability issues are you dealing with?
I have a mobile. I have a problem. I have a dropped foot.
Okay, gotcha.
So I use a cane, and I don't really need the cane most of the time, but for the subways, you need it because it's just ridiculous. The employees don't give you a straight answer why something doesn't work right. Those boards are useless because I've seen the train saying where the board says a train is arriving in 3 minutes, and I've actually timed it with my iPhone, and it was 16 minutes.
Ugh.
And the best one I love almost on a daily basis is these excuses. Due to an earlier incident, due to signal problems, they always have an excuse, but nothing gets fixed. And it should be noted that on the number 2 and 5 lines, they put in new signals 10 years ago.
Right. Right.
And they slowed down the trains for almost 2 years. There was no express trains. So how can you keep constantly having signal problems if they put new signals in?
Emma, I want to ask you a little bit about that. You know, what the process of, you know, fixing the signals, fixing the subway seems like it never ends. It just seems like always it's going to be this stop or this stop or this stop. It's never all going to get fixed or overhauled at once. Can you tell us a little bit about how that's going and what New Yorkers can expect?
Right. So the MTA is trying to do two things at once. They're trying to replace a lot of this really old signal equipment, and at the same time, they're trying to modernize, switch over to a modern system, which they have in London on many of the lines there that's really improved the system. And it's known as communications-based train control. It's very expensive and time-consuming to implement, but so far they've just implemented it on one line, the L line, and it's supposed to open on the number 7 line by the end of this year. And many people believe this is sort of the only way to get more capacity on the system. With these new signals, you can run trains closer together, but it's taking a long time, and the current estimates are, you know, billions of dollars and potentially 40 or 50 years to roll it out across the system. But at the same time, the MTA is trying to go in and fix some of these little pieces of equipment that date back to the 1930s. I wrote a story about the signal system. I went back to one of the back rooms at West 4th Street, and there's trinkets essentially from the 1930s that are running the system today. And so the equipment really needs to be overhauled. The MTA says they're doing it slow but sure, but there's a call now really to do that faster.
Mm. Now, you wrote an article called Money Out of Your Pocket, which describes the economic implications of the unreliable subway system, as we were addressing earlier. A woman who's facing eviction because of a missed appointment. There's a chef who's losing an hour and a half from his paycheck, as you mentioned. In what ways, what other ways are you seeing, you know, as you follow up on that reporting, you know, the potential for if this continues to, you know, be, you know, this go at this pace where people continue to be this frustrated, could there be economic consequences that drive people completely out of New York?
I've spoken with a lot of people that have said, I'd love to leave New York. Some need to be here for career reasons, but I do think it's about quality of life, and if this continues, then it could hurt the quality of life here in New York. I'm interested in hearing more, you know, from low-income folks who are potentially getting, you know, infractions at work or who have lost their jobs. I've heard anecdotally that this is happening, but I'm interested to hear more about them, and at the same time, there is sort of this interesting push to reduce fares for low-income riders, which is being led by transit advocates, and they say, you know, the New York City is unaffordable, and the people who use the system, many of them can't afford it, and it's not even reliable for them, and they're missing work, and so we should discount fares for people who make low wages. So there is, I think, those people are being more impacted by these delays, and again, there's many people who have flexible work schedules, and there's many people who you're not there on time, and, you know, you're written up.
Sean in Bradley Beach, New Jersey. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, how you doing, guys? So I'm a regular visitor. Don't work in New York, but I'm a regular visitor for dinner shows, events, museums, and things like that. So my spending on New York City events has dropped precipitously over the last couple of years because of the troubles with the New Jersey Transit Coastline getting in and out of the stations. I don't like to just try to find an alternate route. I'll just cancel the show or sell my tickets or just not go. And I don't know if my little area of the world is having an impact on the city by not going to these shows. But this year I canceled everything from end of June through the end of August, hoping it's going to be better and I'll have a little free time in September to maybe take in a show. I thought, you know, and I don't know if that's what economic impact you're talking about, as far as also the little bit of local tourism coming in from the outer boroughs, coming in from Long Island, and coming in from the Jersey coast. We do spend a lot of money in the city.
No, that's important to note, Sean. Thank you. Emma, what are you seeing is, you know, the effect that these delays, this construction, what have you, is having on tourism?
It's sort of too soon to tell, and the Brooklyn Borough president said called for a study, and it sounds like there is going to be a study about the economic impact of these transit delays. But I think he made a good point. The Penn Station, people are saying, oh, it's not as bad as we thought it would be, but I think there are a lot of people who are staying home. They're working from home. I spoke with one man who said he was going to use his 2 weeks of vacation during the 2 weeks of disruptions at Penn Station so that he could just avoid the city altogether. And there are, you know, restaurants and shops in the area of Penn Station that are affected. There's, you know, there is an economic impact when people don't want to come into the city or don't want to, you know, use the businesses in the city.
Right, right. Just wanted to also, you know, just take about one of the great things about our subway system, and it's about how interconnected everything is. As you wrote in your piece, though, this can also be a little bit problematic. And one example you mentioned, a power outage at a single station in Brooklyn, triggering a quote-unquote meltdown that affected service all over the city. How do small problems like that spiral out of control so quickly? And how does the MTA deal with that? You know, how do they contain that before it spreads?
Yeah, New York City's subway system is one of the most intricate and complex in the world. You've got express lines, local lines. They're all intersecting here in Midtown Manhattan. And so when there is one problem, it affects, you know, often, you know, all four boroughs. And that's one of the challenges. One of the callers mentioned the fact that it runs 24/7. It's one of the only subway systems that runs 24/7. In London, they shut it down overnight to perform maintenance work. And so the new MTA chair, Joe Loda, has said we may have to have more closures. And that's something New Yorkers may have to get used to. We like to pride ourselves in being the city that never sleeps. And we've all taken the subway at odd hours. But they may need to start closing it overnight to do some of these repairs that are needed to improve the system.
Chloe on Twitter says, quote, the MTA's priorities are also off. My usual R stop is closed for 6 to 8 months so that they can install USB ports. No one wants that. Hashtag summer of hell. I'm not sure, you know, about which R stop she's talking about, but are these stations being closed so that they can update the technology in them?
Some stations are being closed for renovations. They want, as you know, the subway system, there's a lot of stations that are pretty decrepit and water falling from the ceiling and tiles falling off. And so the MTA is trying to go and renovate some of these stations. And in the meantime, they're putting up new signage and they are putting up new, they're buying new trains with USB ports and charging stations. And there's a lot of riders who say, I don't care about the aesthetics. You know, I just want to get from A to B. And so Governor Cuomo in particular, you know, he's in control of the subway system. And he has pushed the MTA to improve the look of the system. And there are certainly people, like the woman you mentioned on Twitter, who say, I don't care about that stuff. Just have my train run on time.
Right, right. Wow. Want to go to Tim in Brooklyn. Tim, you're on WNYC.
Hey, how you doing?
Not too bad.
I wanted to teach transit advocates in New York a term that I learned in the Bay Area. The director of the BART board out there looked at a project that was expensive and ineffective, and he called it blingfrastructure. Instead of, he said, this isn't infrastructure, this is blingfrastructure.
Mm.
And that's what the Second Avenue subways turned out to be. It did not need, for instance, to have mezzanines. That took an enormous amount of money to tunnel out extremely large amounts of volume of earth that didn't need to be tunneled out. It's got giant, you know, dragon scale glass coverings over its exits that it didn't need.
Mm.
And it's in the, and typically we see this in New York. We put the most money into the fanciest neighborhoods. So I would just like to like I say, the less blingfrastructure, more infrastructure. If we spend, you know, if we had cut $1 billion out of that project, how much could we have put into maintaining and you know and actually, you know, having a functional operating system and doing the necessary repairs. Same thing with the Brooklyn streetcar. We're putting it through the richest neighborhoods in Brooklyn. The proposal is right, and at the expense of who? The poor people. Can we not do that?
Wow. Thank you, Tim, for the call. Emma, did you have any thoughts on what Tim had to say there?
I hadn't heard that term before, but maybe I'm going to use it now. But there has been, I mean, people were really excited to go and see the Second Avenue subway when it opened in January. The stations are filled with mosaic artwork. They are quite beautiful, but they were really expensive. And we've written about how the Q line, the extension up there on the Upper East Side, has helped. It has fit a transit purpose. People have moved from the 456 to the Q, and so the 456, which is the busiest line in the country, is now more tolerable. But that's a fair criticism that a lot of people have made, that the stations are too large and too ornate, and that money should go to maintenance. And one big question moving forward is the Second Avenue subway phase two is going to be built to 125th Street in East Harlem. And so there's a debate now, I think, over, you know, what should those stations look like and how much money should be spent on this project when we've got all this other stuff happening on the subway.
Mm. Well, my guest is Emma Fitzsimmons, transit reporter for the New York Times. Emma, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.